This is Raphael McDonald from Resource Center Dallas. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
Okay, we'll start at the beginning. What is Victory Fund?
I'm sorry. Victory Fund is a it's an LGBTQ candidate-focused group. Its sole mission is to elect out candidates. And it does that in several ways. It does that by conducting trainings, by doing endorsements and fundraising, and then there's a board that, you know, just financial board that raises the money and guides the organization. But there's three branches to Victory Fund, much like our federal government.
And a key aspect of the Victory Fund is an early project of our own William Wayborn,
who started so many organizations here in Dallas.
I'm trying to make sure we can hear Patty.
Okay. started so many organizations here in Dallas and was one of the he started The Voice too, didn't he, David? William Wayborn?
No, he
wasn't involved in The Voice?
He had purchased the Houston Voice and the Atlanta Voice.
Okay, I knew some queer publications, and then The Blade in D.C., right?
And The Blade in D.C.
Yeah, so, but William Wayborn has a long, rich history here in Dallas, and he was one of the founders of the Victory Fund. And honestly, they don't hold politicians accountable. You know, if somebody messes up, they say that's what the next election is for. But they do only endorse out running as out viable candidates. So,
and those candidates, regardless, just the only qualifications have to be out. Doesn't matter what party they're with.
No, it is a bipartisan organization. Obviously, we've been endorsing more Democrats than Republicans lately, but there are a handful of Republicans that are open-minded and right on our issues, not the crazy ones.
So you endorse George Santos?
No.
No. That would be no.
That would be no.
But there's how many? I mean, I would think it's
like
really
three.
Small.
Yeah,
how many Republican candidates are there?
There's like three.
Okay.
Yeah.
At a school board level, at a city council level,
exactly.
There are some.
Yeah, and that's another thing that the Victory Fund does that I am most impressed. And one of the things that made me want to join their board is they go down to the city council and school board level. They believe in every race is impactful and important and can make a difference for our equality. And it builds a bench, which is something we've always said we needed, you know, as politicians coming up through the ranks. And the Anise Parker, the current executive director, says, you know, there's the coattail effect where a big name on a ballot like Colin Allred or a presidential candidate will pull the smaller races along with it. She believes in the push-up effect where races for school board and city council or water board or, you know, appraisal districts or whatever help push up the big the turnout for the big candidates, because your neighbors are going to go vote for you. Your family's going to go vote for you. Your friends are going to go vote for you. And those are people that may not have voted otherwise. So that's Anise's theory, is the push-up rather than the drag-along or the coattails effect.
And Anise is a multi alum of Lambda Weekly.
She is. Mm-hmm. Yes.
She's been on our show many times. Mm-hmm. In person.
And she and I were co-grand marshals for the 2010 Alan Ross Freedom Parade, Pride Parade. So, Anise and I go back to, I think, about 2008, where, you know, I helped her. I supported her in her race for mayor. And
right. She won 9 elections because Houston's city government is set up differently than Dallas's. Mm-hmm. You can run for 3 2-year terms.
Right.
And she ran as a city council person 3 times and won each of those 3 times. She ran for city comptroller 3 times and won all 3, and mayor 3 times.
Yeah, and they've since changed the term for mayor, I think. It's not a 2-year term anymore, but
but that was history-making.
Yeah, it's definitely history-making when she was elected, and she has done an amazing, amazing job at Victory Fund, turning it from, I don't want to say sleepy, but kind of underutilized to frankly, a major force in
the number of candidates endorsed by Victory Fund doubled under Anise.
Yes, it is. It has grown exponentially under her tutelage, and they really put their money where their mouth is, not only with endorsements, but like the most recent example was Venton Jones and Julie Johnson's races in the primaries. They sent people down to work. You know, they sent campaign staff to be here for the last, I think, month and a half, 2 months of each of those campaigns. And they work on, you know, getting the word out, on fundraising, on, you know, house parties, on everything. They're an extra staffer for those campaigns, and that can make a big difference in a lot of campaigns, especially at the state and local level. So,
for new candidates who've never run before, does the Victory Fund kind of like have any trainings or help them out, or?
Yes, they do. Thank you, Laurent. Actually, the Campaign Institute is one of the best trainings ever for any candidate, and it happens to be exclusively for LGBTQ candidates through Victory Fund. But it is envied. I'll say that. You know, Annie's List does a training, and I think Battleground Texas does a training, and there's some other candidate trainings. But the Victory Fund training is by far and away one of the best trainings out there.
It's rigorous.
It's rigorous. I took it a long time ago. If I ran again ever again, I would need to take it again. But they put you through the paces, and the training covers everything from, do you know your numbers? You know, what's your number to win? Do you know how much money you need to win? Do you know, who, can you answer the questions, like, why are you running? Which is, believe it or not, one of the hardest questions a candidate has to answer. And the first question I ask any candidate, and if they can't answer it, if they stumble,
because
you're not viable.
You know very well yourself, for people who think that running for office, even if it's something on a very basic level like a school board, it's not just a matter of, ooh, I'll just go and say what I stand for, and that's going to get me elected.
No.
It's way more than that.
No,
if you want to do it right anyway.
Yeah, well, no, school board elections are getting as expensive as city council races.
They have been, yeah.
And you don't get paid to be on the school board. You barely get paid to be on city council, but but yeah, they run you through the paces. It's a long weekend, and it's an intense 24/7 training. You never are not training. You have to put together a campaign. You have to put together a financial plan. You have to put together all kinds of things. So when you leave the Victory Fund campaign training, you know how to run a race.
And most importantly, I think, too, is that you know how to be an out candidate, and field all of those questions, and not let that become the focus of your campaign.
Do you know who does that the best that I've seen is Julie, because if you don't bring it up, she's going to.
Yeah,
she wants it out there. She is a lesbian candidate who is running for Congress, and if you're not going to vote for me because I'm a lesbian, so be it. Let's move on.
Probably weren't going to vote for her anyway, yeah. But Victory's been doing this since before it was, when it could be used as a liability against you, and now I guess it can be always used against you, but it's at least not illegal.
But Victory Fund, and in fact, it was Anise who came up with this. She said, if I'm not going to lie to you about who I am, I'm not going to lie to you about what I'm voting for.
Yeah, so, like I said, I just got back from a board meeting, and the state of the organization is strong. They are conducting an executive director search, and I think...
Because Anise announced she's leaving at the end of the year.
Yep, she's going to stay through the election, thank goodness. Stay through November, but they want to hire someone and do, a cross-training for a good long time, and full transparency and all that.
A couple of months.
Yeah, 3 months, I think, is the plan, yeah. And she, like I said, she's been an amazing leader of the organization, and to lose her right before a presidential election would be devastating.
Is she going to retire, or is she...
I believe so. She says I was talking to her about it this past weekend, and she said, I've already retired twice. I think it's her plan is to...
Is he going to bake sourdough bread?
I don't know. People like her have a hard time retiring, but that's the plan anyway. So she's
retiring like Glenn Maxey keeps retiring.
She wants to be home, is what she said. She wants to be in Houston. So,
One of the things that you had said earlier, and I want to go into this in a little bit of detail, because if somebody is thinking of running for office, I don't want them to be scared off.
Yeah.
I've found Victory Fund to be a very warm and welcoming and embracing organization. Mm-hmm. That offers help. Now, one of the things you said was, do you know how much it's going to cost you to run for office?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I can give a guess maybe on a city council race. I have no idea on a congressional race or a legislative race. What was your answer when you went to your training because you were running for city council?
Full disclosure, I went to the training in 2010. In December of 2010 that they held in D.C. And they've had trainings here in Dallas. They move it around the country. They've had trainings in California. They've had trainings in Tennessee, Nashville. Atlanta has had a training or two. So you can travel to a training nearby you or just go to D.C. for the one that they have there. So in 2010, my answer was a lot different than it was when I finally wound up running in 2019. So my race, I raised almost $90,000. For a city council race, which is...
And what was your answer originally?
It was 50. 50,000.
So. And I don't think you can do a congressional race unless it's a really small state. But even then, if they only have one or two reps, those are going to be expensive because a lot of people vying for them. But I don't think you can do a congressional race today with less than $1 million.
No.
Viably. I mean, like, probably much more. But yeah. That's generically across the country. I think you'd need at least $1 million to be, you know, viable.
In a way, a city representative has an advantage because it's only one market.
Right.
There's one district that runs from El Paso all the way to San Antonio. There's something like 10 different media markets that you have to hit. That gets very expensive.
Right.
A very rural race.
And my answer to your question was going to be, how long is a piece of string? It really depends on the market that you're running in. You know, a congressional race, like here in Dallas, county commissioners have almost exactly the same population as a congressional district. You know, that's not the case in every county. So it depends on what you're running for and how you're running. But the great thing about the Victory training is they have formulas and facts and will guide you through those steps. So at the end of the training, you know if this is something you can do, or you know what, maybe I should wait a little bit, you know, maybe let it percolate a little bit like I did. Maybe I should just work on a campaign and not run for office. You know, it just really helps you figure out where you are in that process. And answer some hard questions, like LaRon was saying. You know, do you know why you're running? Do you know what your stances are? How are you going to answer these questions? Can you handle media? You know, there's a lot of different trainings that go into that one weekend.
Okay, so if Patty were running for office, it would be to promote her Trump Bibles that she's been selling door-to-door when she's not in on Sundays.
Well, we've got them in Boston Gold now, so if you want to buy one, they've gone up $80.
Ah.
So
she gets her cut.
I was just going to say, though, that this training is rigorous, and we don't want to scare people off, obviously. But I kind of look at it like law school or medical school. You go to a school to prepare you to pass your bar or pass your medical board exam.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't do that, then that's the wrong school for you, because they should be able to, you should say confidently, if I go through this course of study, at the end, I'm going to pass with flying colors because they've prepared me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what this training does. Once you go through it, you're going to be ready. You can be confident you're going to be ready.
Or frankly, know that you're not.
It's okay to go through training and decide, maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And they don't talk about it a lot, but they also have a campaign staffer training that runs concurrent with the candidate training. So like if you want to be a campaign manager or communications manager for campaigns, those trainings are running as well. So it really is to prepare you. And you know what else is rigorous beyond the training is running for office. I mean, you need to know what you're getting into. It's not just throwing your name on a ballot and sending out a few mailers. I mean, you have to know what it is you're facing if you want to do it right. If you want to do the right and do a good job at not only running but at governing. So
how does it work for these candidates who don't live in a big metropolitan areas, you know, very rural? They're really out there by themselves. Mm-hmm. They may have never even heard of Victory Fund. Do you all contact them, or do people usually contact you and say, hey, I need your help?
There's a big mix. There's a database of out candidates, you know, and they have to run as out. Again, I'm going to keep saying that. You can't say, yeah, I'm gay, but I don't want to talk about it.
right.
You know, Mississippi, I'll lose if I run in Mississippi as out. Well, you're not a Victory Fund candidate.
Right.
Because the whole point is to run as out and change the narrative.
And Mississippi had somebody elected finally.
Yes.
They did. You know, the only state that hasn't had a out state representative?
California.
No, Louisiana.
Really?
Louisiana, really.
Yeah. It's the last bastion. Huh. So,
even Alabama has had one,
and
Mississippi.
And Mississippi?
Yep.
Wow. But not Louisiana.
Not Louisiana. Not a state representative.
And we're saying out.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, oh, honey, yeah. That'd be painful. We don't talk about Uncle Fester. There's still surprising races that need to be won, and Victory does tend to concentrate on what they call game changers or spotlight candidates who are going to make, you know, the first, you know, will be the first. Like Julie is the first out lesbian congresswoman from the South.
Will be,
yeah, sorry. Yeah. She hadn't been elected yet. but I'm okay. I'm really trying not to say that she is, but she will be.
It's a Democratic-leaning district.
It's a Democratic-leaning district. So they invested heavily in Julie. The other race that they're investing very heavily in right now is Sarah McBride from Delaware. She's a state congressperson and who's running for... She's a state senator who's running for Congress. openly trans, young, extremely dynamic.
I was going to say, just well-spoken.
Yeah.
She is a great speaker.
An absolute great speaker. And she ran communications for the Human Rights Campaign for a while. She's used to media. She's used to politics. She's done amazing legislation in Delaware, gotten two or three or four bipartisan trans protection bills, LGBTQ rights bills, you know, adoption bills, protections, and all that passed in Delaware. I think a couple of them were unanimous, you know, so definitely bipartisan. Just an amazing candidate. And if you can, and I know we got a lot of races locally, but if you can throw a couple of bucks her way, Sarah McBride is a very worthy candidate and would be a game changer if she gets elected.
Has there been somebody trans elected to Congress yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. She'd be the first. Hmm. And I heard her speak this weekend as well, this past weekend. She says, you know, we're facing the headwinds of history, which I love that phrase. But she also talked about things that gave her hope along her journey that kept her going. And she says, and I want to be the person that gives the next person hope, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
So.
When you did your training, what was your why for why you were running?
Why I wanted to run? Well, one, there's never been a lesbian on Dallas City Council.
An out lesbian.
Okay. An out lesbian on Dallas City Council.
Because there have been lesbians
there
on Dallas
been
City Council.
Well, we think, yeah. Which is not motivation enough to run, but it's certainly a milestone to be hit. You know, and every time there have been many very qualified women to try, but we just have never managed to succeed to get on the city council. But the why for me was to represent, frankly, just to represent my area well. And I didn't challenge or run again because I think the person in the position now is doing a good job. You know, and
there's
I'm not,
nothing wrong with, you know, people like to take sides, and it's not like Aaron good, so opponent terrible.
No.
There were two good people who were running.
I would do things a lot differently, but that doesn't mean that the way they're being done is bad.
Or wrong.
Yeah. So, you know, I had this conversation this morning. Either run to be someone, which, you know, there's a lot of politicians out there that run for that, or to do something. And if you're running to do something and it's being done, then you move on to the next thing that needs to be done. You know, so my why was to represent my area, but also to represent my community on the Dallas City Council.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink, who's off the Trump Bible sales circuit for the day. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. Our guest today is Erin Moore. She is a board member of the LGBT Victory Fund and just came back from a board meeting. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Victory Fund does not, one of the groups of people that Victory Fund does not work with is allies. Victory Fund only supports LGBTQ candidates themselves.
Yes.
What's the reason for that? Because there are cases where a good ally mm-hmm. might do a better job of representing us than a mediocre
out person. Well, first of all, let me back up an asterisk what you said. I'm a member of the Victory Fund campaign board, which is a separate entity from the board, the governing board. And the campaign board, what we do is vet candidates. We have meetings where we read their bios. There's committees that call up not only them, but their friends and neighbors and employers and ask questions. And, I mean, it's a full, thorough background vetting.
That could be real dangerous with some of the gay candidates I know who've run.
But the reason we don't endorse allies are there. One, there are other groups that do that, and two, it's said at the top of the hour, it is a very singularly focused organization. We are there to elect out candidates. Period. That's it. Not move legislation. Not support propositions. Not anything but support out gay candidates. Which is why the first time in the history of the organization, they endorsed for president last go round with Pete Buttigieg, and they endorsed him fairly early on. He is an out candidate for president, you know, and that was history making.
And that's needed.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's very much needed.
Yeah, exactly.
When I met Pete Buttigieg, EBJ had introduced us, and it was just one of those things that we're just both standing there. And she walked over to him, grabbed him by the arm, and said, "Honey, there's somebody that I need you to meet," and brings him over to me.
Oh, wow.
So, thinking I had like 30 seconds to think of something intelligent to say, but I thanked him for his contribution to the LGBT community for having run for office.
Absolutely. And even though he didn't win the presidency, he represented himself well. He represented our community well.
He won Iowa.
He won Iowa, which is, you know, okay, he won Iowa. And now as Secretary of Transportation, he is killing it on the circuit. I mean, all the news shows and...
Name a previous Secretary of Transportation.
I can't.
You can't.
Exactly. Right. And he's the one who's always out
Mitch
there.
Mitch McConnell's wife, whatever her name was.
Elaine Chao.
Chao, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's doing the news circuits, and he always talks about his family and his husband, Chasten, and mm-hmm. and that's why Victory Fund does what it does. It's like, you know, our T-shirts say representation matters, and that's the slogan of the organization, representation matters. Mm-hmm. You see someone that represents you or that looks like you or that acts like you or that is talking about things that you couldn't have words to talk about, they're giving you a vocabulary, they're giving you history, they're giving you, you know, things to hook onto that represent you, and that matters.
And going back to my original premise, what if there's an ally running who would represent us better? I guess that should come out in your vetting of the candidate, And if there's somebody better running, you might not endorse them.
Might, yeah.
Depends on the circumstances,
There are races where, you know, lots of candidates seek the endorsement. Not everybody gets it. And there's a big viability component to it. It's like, are you a serious candidate? Not just, you know, I'm gay, I'm throwing my name on the ballot. I think I'm all that, so I'm going to run. You have to be a viable candidate. And if there's an ally, I mean, there have been races where there have been allies against out LGBTQ people. But if the LGBT, if the ally is that strong, then the viability question comes into play, you know. However, we're not going to not endorse somebody just because there's an ally in the race, you know.
I think that's an ideal situation.
I would much rather have someone from the community at the table than someone who supports the community at the table. You know, and I know that's a fine line, and not to throw allies under the bus, because God bless them, we wouldn't be where we are if we didn't have them. But if, you know, all things being, you know, this is a Stonewall Democrats of Dallas thing. All things being equal, support the gay candidate. You know, it's all things being equal is being mm-hmm. the key phrase there.
I always think of, if we don't do it, who will?
Right.
If we don't support our own,
right.
Who will?
Right. And there's a race right now. I won't say where it is or who it is, but there's a race right now where there's two equally viable, equally supported, equally out, equally representational candidates running against each other for a seat. That's a great problem to have.
Yeah.
Problem to have.
Yeah. So,
is that a local race?
No. It's not in Texas. So the board actually had to think, well, do we not endorse at all? Do we do a dual endorsement, which is never a good idea. I never, ever want to see any organization do a dual endorsement, because it says you can't make up your mind.
And how's the voters supposed to make up their mind?
Right, exactly. Right. So what we're doing is a qualified endorsement, and qualified not as in hedging our bets, but qualified as in they're both qualified. We're not doing any kind of endorsement at all for the person. We're just endorsing the race, saying,
go vote.
Go vote. You decide.
You have two good
candidates.
You're
not going to lose. Yeah.
See, this is like, I mean, I think this is very common in electoral politics. I can remember in 2008 when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were duking it out, and I thought, I like them both, and we will be well served with either one who wins. You know, like that. I don't think one's better than the other. I think they're both, what a great problem to have. Mm-hmm. I think they're both very well qualified. I will go with either one who wins. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think that that situation raises its head all over the country in many different ways.
But, and I think both of them have said, because they were duking it out with each other, it made them both better candidates.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I can say fairly confidently that I don't want to say issue or problem, but that situation is just now starting to hit the gay community, where we're having
that dynamic
where we're having equally viable, equally qualified, equally representational. You know, in this race, one is a trans woman and one is an Asian man. You know, I mean, like, you've got all the diversity in the world in this race, you know, so if you like the stance of one over the other, or one is your neighbor, or, you know, whatever the reasons that you're going to pick to vote, but you cannot go wrong with either one of them.
Vote for them for the right reasons, because right. They have some different positions on certain issues. Vote for the one that...
Right. Right. Well, they're both incredibly progressive as well. So, it's that situation that's just now coming, I think, to the LGBTQ plus community, where we have, you know, just
new
like
choices
forever and ever. Straight people have run against equally qualified straight people, and now we've got gay people running against equally qualified gay people, and we're having to make some hard decisions. It's not always an automatic anymore, and I think that's a great problem to have. So.
And I think, too, there, when we look at it from our perspective, let's say we're just a queer person living in a big city, like say, in Dallas, and we look at something from the Victory Fund, there are real opportunities to help our local candidates who are endorsed by the Victory Fund by giving to the Victory Fund.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tap that set of skills and talents that that organization could bring to the race here. I remember for many years, Lupe Valdez was an endorsed candidate from
she
the Victory
again.
Fund, and so many others, and like Omar Navarez and Adam Medrano and others in the past who've been endorsed by the Victory Fund. And it's also a way that we can think about giving when we say we're going to give to a candidate. You can give to a candidate through the Victory Fund.
Yes.
And recognize those dollars will then be recognized as gay dollars or LGBTQ dollars when given to the candidate, which I think is really important to be able to say that queer money is in support of a candidate is a thing you have to contend with.
You know, and if you just want to help the cause and to donate, you can give to the Victory Fund's federal PAC and let the Victory Fund determine where the money needs to be spent. You know, Tammy Baldwin's in a big race right now, a huge race, and is in danger of losing, which would be very bad for our community. She's been such a groundbreaker in, you know, supporting the Equality Act and just doing so many firsts for our community. To have her lose would be just a huge loss. So, you know, there are ways to support out candidates without having to do all the vetting and the research that the Victory Fund does. Like, we've got some here in Texas. You know, Molly Cook would be the first out member in the Texas Senate. Mm-hmm. She's running for...
Where is she running?
I think she's Houston. She's running for Whitmire's seat. John Whitmire, who won mayor of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Josie Garcia, who's House of Representatives. Celia Israel is running again. She's running for Travis County Tax Assessor. Ann Johnson, who we supported last time, is running in the Houston area. She's openly lesbian. Julie Johnson, of course, we've been talking about. Jolanda Jones is in the Houston area. Venton Jones is ours. Spotlight candidate that's running is Laura Ashley Simmons, who's running against...
Sean Thierry,
who just is transphobic as all get out, like literally cross the aisle to be transphobic and say that it's against God's law, and you know that she was voting for, you know, against anything that would cause harm to our children, to get
banning books and
medically necessary care and things like that. So Laura Ashley Simmons is a very important candidate to support right now, and unseat a bigot. So, I mean, you know, there's lots of local races to support. But if you just want to support the cause, like I said, and just give to the federal PAC, and then Victory can decide where the money needs to go.
You know, mentioning money, I know you talked about how much money you raise for your race.
Mm-hmm.
This really didn't have anything to do very specific with the Victory Fund. This is any candidate running. What does that money go to? Like, some people are probably thinking, I mean, of course I know, but some, like, why do they need that much money just to run?
Well, you've got to do outreach. Mm-hmm. So you're going to do some mailers, which is quite a, frankly, most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yard signs.
The mailers, it's not just the printing, but it's the postage.
Postage is a big deal, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the printing, yeah, yard signs, although, you know, there's the old maxim that yard signs don't vote, but I always think that it helps generate excitement and, you know, visibility and, oh, they've got a yard sign, I need a yard sign, you know.
Well, and it's also, oh, yeah, I usually agree with that yard.
Which is our case.
Yeah.
Which is people.
I have a lot of people in my precinct who go, I don't know who to vote for until you put your yard signs out.
So
we have a very active corner
of
yard signs. And I have to throw this in because this is kind of funny. In all the years since Google Street View has been around, every photo they take and every updated photo they take of our house has yard signs.
Yes. Very proud of that. And the other thing that you can spend the money on, and I did, is some paid staffers. You know, I had a paid field person. I paid a consultant a little bit of money to help kind of narrow down message and narrow down turfs to walk and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need office space.
Sometimes, yeah, I didn't do that. I just used a co-working space for me. But then towards the end of the campaign, when you really needed to do the push, you know, I had a lot of volunteers, thankfully. But you also want people who are dedicated to working on your campaign. So I paid a, you know, staffer to walk, to block walk and knock on doors and things like that. But I only had, I had 2.5 staff people for a 9-month campaign. And, you know, the money racks up. I mean, you want to pay them well and covered insurance and, you know, some other things that don't often
happen. And here's another big one, which I don't think you did. But if you want a TV ad, that costs.
Oh, that's big money.
That's
even
big
radio.
Money.
Even radio.
Even radio
is expensive.
Even radio is expensive. And then, you know, there's costs associated with things like, you know, fundraisers. You know, you got to spend money to make money. And so it adds up. And $87,000 for my race in a runoff, I'll add that in there.
Oh, that's right.
It sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money. But it's, Dallas is a big city, and my district has the most, it's the second highest voting district, I think, second or third highest voting district. So there's a lot of people to reach, and there's a lot of effort to expend. Now, other districts in Dallas, you might not have to spend that much. You could probably win with, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, depending on what you spend the money on and how many people you have to touch.
Right. Omar has said he's been able to target certain neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Because it's a long, thin district, the way it's gerrymandered.
Right.
And there are certain places in that area where nobody votes and certain places where most of the people vote.
Exactly. So, again, how long is a piece of string kind of thing? But, yeah, that's what you spend the money on. And you're right. Some campaigns do radio and TV. You can do 2 mailers, 3 mailers, 4 mailers, depending. Believe it or not, mailers still work because people, you know, even if they look at it and toss it, they'll, when they go to the polls, they go, oh, I recognize that name, you know.
And also candidates, depending on what level of office you're running for, oftentimes sponsor things along the way. There are events in your district, and you want to be contributing, and you want to have a table at an event or whatever.
Well, one of the things Aaron had an entry in the Alan Ross Texas Freedom Parade.
I did.
There's a cost to that.
There's a cost to that. You want to know what one of my biggest expenses was? It's kind of funny. Was an ad in the Woodrow Wilson High School Play Program. That cost me more money than just about anything else.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, per thing, yeah. It wasn't cheap. So, that kind of thing adds up. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well.
And, of course, T-shirts.
T-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Have to T-shirts.
You know, in every size.
Right, right.
For volunteers. But, yeah.
So it does add up.
It can definitely add up. Yeah. And you know, you spend what you make, or you make what you spend, I should say.
Oh, and here's another one, because I saw one. And I forgot the person's running, but a billboard. Not everybody does them.
Right.
But there's a guy running for something in Garland, and he has the most elaborate billboard.
There were a couple of judge billboards this last election, which surprised me. Yeah. I saw one on 30. So, yeah, billboards, you know, you get a budget, you work your budget. You either cut or add, depending on where you are. You know, it's a fluid thing. But there's always another way to reach a voter. And it used to be, you know, like some people pay for texting programs, you know, where you get texts about, hey, this is Colin Allred, please vote for me. You know,
those texting programs I find so annoying.
I do too, but
I get them all the time.
There's a big community that doesn't find them annoying. You know,
I have thousands, and I have to scroll past them to find, like, if I want to text David, I'm like, I know I have a thread running with David. Where is it? I just scroll and scroll and scroll past all the political stuff.
I just delete them.
Yeah.
It keeps coming back, but I just remove
it's
the
whack-a-mole.
Thread.
Yeah.
Well, you can type in stop.
You can.
And that cuts them off for a short while.
Yeah. You know, there didn't used to be a search feature on text, so now there is. So you can search for David Tappan.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to find him. I just scroll and scroll.
Good point, Aaron.
Yeah. So, I mean, it used to be you had to have three touches, what they call touches, three reminders per voter to get them to actually go vote. Now I think it's up to something like 12. before they'll actually go and vote. So, yeah, if you're getting annoying texts and emails and mailers, it's because you're not voting. So it's your own fault, really.
I don't know.
I vote all the time.
I vote all the time.
I'm getting flooded.
Okay.
You know, I feel like typing back to them. I know it's a robot that's doing it, but you feel like texting back, I'm voting for you now. Go campaign where
you
it's
going to
do you some good.
You know, sometimes it's not a robot. I've done this program, and I can't remember the name of it right now.
It's called Hustle.
Hustle, thank you. Where it's a live person texting you.
Really?
And yeah, when I would do it, I would get like these nasty replies back, and I'm like, well, okay, I hope you have a blessed day, sir. You know, and all this stuff, and they're like, whoa, you're real. And I'm like, uh-huh.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM in Dallas, and we'll be back with Aaron Moore and more right after this. And we are talking to Aaron Moore. We've been talking about Victory Fund. I want to get, especially Patty, your opinion of what happened in Arizona this week.
I get so disgusted by all of this, but I'm not really surprised.
Me either.
None of this really surprises me. They want to go back to...
Well, let's announce what happened in Arizona.
Arizona. For the not-so-news addicted, right, what happened?
Right. Well, the Arizona Supreme Court is going to allow a vote on... the right to reproductive health care and abortion on the ballot in November. But until then, they've put in place an old law from 1864, which was 50 years before Arizona even became a state in the right. United States of America. And this old thing is full of other things that are literally about controlling women.
I think Texas should do the same thing and put in place some laws that were written before we became a state, because those laws would have been written in Spanish.
Yeah, that'll go over well now.
Uh-huh.
All things considered. But
no, that's a different station. This is Lambda Weekly.
Right.
Yeah, it is the Supreme Court ruling that they can, that the law is allowable to be enforced is, one, utterly ridiculous, but all it's going to do is make them put it on the ballot, which is going to drive Democratic turnout. You know, I mean, they're doing these things to, you know, neener us, but it's backfiring like crazy. But in the meantime, real lives and real women are going to be hurt.
Yeah, that is the encouraging news. It will go on a ballot, and so far... I think every time it's gone on a ballot.
Every time.
We have won.
Yes.
The other encouraging news, I just heard this yesterday, the Arizona Attorney General said that they are not enforcing it.
Right. Yeah, there's a Democratic Attorney General and she's not enforcing it.
They're not enforcing it.
So.
And if you look at the history of that law, and even in and of itself, it was made for territorial Arizona at the time by a man who was a misogynist who was married like four or five different times, each time to a very, very underage little girl.
Yeah.
And this is no coincidence that these laws were written by such a person and that they are draconian and, you know, benefit a man to control a woman and a little girl's. And that's what this was about. And it was prescient in 1864, and it's still going on today. The Supreme Court of the United States, when Alito wrote his opinion about Dobbs, he went back even further than 1864 in order to find tradition. You know, well, one of the things I'd like to say today is we've never had a tradition of Viagra and Cialis, and I think it ought to go away. You know, because it's not God's plan.
Right.
Right. God meant you to have.
Right.
You know, then,
a limp member.
Yeah.
Then that's the way it is.
Yep.
And you know, I'm like, do you really not see what you're doing in terms of controlling women? This is about controlling women and women's lives. Because if women don't have economic viability and independence, and they don't, unless if they're tethered to a home and a child that was not even intended. I mean, we don't even have exceptions in Texas for rape.
Nope.
No.
And there are 26,000 women, something like that, across this state, just since Dobbs was passed, mm-hmm. who are carrying pregnancies as a result of rape, a violent act against women, and have no recourse.
Right.
And that to me is a grave sin.
That's inhumane.
It is inhumane. You know, and these women are stuck.
I deleted Twitter a while ago. X, I guess now. But there was a tweet that just says it so succinctly. I can't talk. Says it so succinctly. It says, if you don't accept that bodily autonomy is an essential, unconditional liberty, it's a waste of time talking to you at all. No other liberty survives without that one. More fundamental than property rights. If you don't own yourself, absolutely, you own nothing. And that's exactly what they're doing, is trying to give ownership, quote-unquote ownership, of women to men. Mm-hmm. And that's what these draconian, you know, pre-colonial, or not pre-colonial, but Civil War era rulings and legislation and all that that's coming through is trying to do, is trying to make women the property of men again.
A cadaver has more rights. Dead person in this country has more rights than a woman today.
A gun has more rights than a woman
because
today.
Because a dead person can dictate whether your organs are removed mm-hmm. and used for someone else's purposes. And they have complete control over that, bodily autonomy.
Yeah,
so not a woman. We can use your uterus.
So what do you, just curious, what do you all think? There are women who actually support this as well.
I know.
And it's I don't even have words for it. It's mind-boggling.
I don't have words for it either.
It's like, are you serious?
There are some people who are simply against abortion without considering the ramifications of that.
And they're willing to let women die. They put an unborn baby's life above living women.
Right.
And I don't understand that, and I will never understand that.
Yeah.
So I don't have an explanation for it.
Yeah.
I don't either. Stockholm Syndrome, maybe. I don't know. That their lives are so tied to a perceived morality and a perceived life with a husband and children and, you know, where there's a supported family and all this, that their identity is so tied to that they can't conceive of any other identity or situation. And that's the only thing I can think of, is that it doesn't affect me.
They didn't have
me.
A problem during their pregnancy, so why should you have one in yours?
Correct.
Right. That's just called privilege.
Or, right. Yes, that's exactly right. Or
It's health privilege. I mean, it's an odd kind of privilege.
Right.
It's
health and wealth. There's a lot of wealth and poverty wrapped up into this, too. You know, what it's ignoring is, like, the case that's being appealed right now is the woman who has that kind of stable home life and situation and had an ectopic pregnancy and almost died mm-hmm. and could not even get treated until she was almost dying.
Right.
Because of the draconian Texas law.
And that's what's sickening to me. What physician, what medical doctor, and frankly, what human being says, I must let your physical health deteriorate to the point that your life is in danger before I can help you, even though we know
right.
from science that this is where this is going to lead. You would never allow that to happen
in any other situation.
If I cut my finger and get sepsis in my finger, I'm getting treated. If I get pregnant and get sepsis in my uterus, I cannot get treated until I'm almost dead. It's that simple. It's like, you know,
that's how you know it's not and never was about saving babies or for the life of the baby. It's not about
It's never
that.
About life.
No. Yeah, right.
No, it and I mean, you know, it's the old saw, you know, they only care about you till you're born. But a lot of this is wrapped up in poverty and keeping people, I'm just going to say it, you know, barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. You know, they don't want people who don't think like them to vote.
You know, that's why Republicans were so upset when, what's her name from Mississippi, or Alabama was did the rebuttal to the State of the Union from her kitchen.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
The Republican women were upset by that. It was like, no, you know, you just fed the stereotype that we're
yes.
This is what we believe. You know, women should be in the kitchen and. You know, and it's like, yeah, that's where we went.
Yeah.
Well, if you raise an ignorant populace, an uneducated, ignorant, poverty-ridden populace, then you tend to get, you know, what you want done. You know, you don't have thinking voters, then you're not going to ever get pushback on anything. And I really think that so much of this that's supposedly rooted in morality is really much more rooted in privilege. You know, it's got nothing to do with morality. It's got nothing, very little to do with, you know, what you're. It's being taught in churches and couched in morality, but the base root of it is privilege. It's like we are losing power if we let other populations gain power. So, wow, yeah. That was a tall soapbox. Thanks, David.
You're welcome. Before we run out of time, the first criminal trial of any U.S. president is set to begin tomorrow when Trump stands trial for his role in a hush money deal with a porn actress who's actually from Forney, Texas.
She's from Forney?
Uh-huh.
Go Stormy.
And that was ahead of the 2016 presidential election. The trial's expected to last for 4 weeks. So Trump will be forced off the campaign trail and into a seat at the defense table in a Manhattan courtroom.
Does he have to be there?
Yes, New York law.
This is a criminal trial.
Okay. Yeah.
Under a criminal trial, he has to be there.
He skipped out on a bunch of his civil trial.
He doesn't have to testify. He said he does want to testify, but yeah. I don't think he has to.
Oh, I hope he will.
Oh, he will.
Yeah, he can't keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
I still don't know why this man's not in jail for contempt of court.
And here's the thing. If he's found guilty... It's still not going to change anybody's mind.
No,
supporters.
No.
And he can still run, and he can still run. Unless he's like sentenced.
Yeah, he'll get a slap on the wrist, a fine.
They haven't put him in jail for contempt of court for doxing the judge and the judge's family.
Exactly.
If that judge did not put him in jail for that, they're not going to give him a big sentence.
You know, he was screaming, biased judge. That judge gave him so much leeway.
Oh, completely.
Tons of leeway. So, yeah, but it's still going to be interesting to watch a trial with him sitting quietly, supposedly.
Now, in this trial, he's charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records, which stem from his reimbursements to Michael Cohen, his fixer, after arranging a hush money deal with Stormy Daniels.
And there will be another one discussed as well, the Karen McDougal.
Mm-hmm.
She was a story that the Inquirer... went and the National Enquirer went out and made a deal with her on behalf of Trump, and it was called that catch and kill. And so they said, "Well, we'll publish your story." So they paid her amount of money, and then of course they didn't publish the story. So they wanted to keep it quiet and kill it because he was running for president. And the part of the whole thrust of this whole case is that the guy who has the crazy name. That's head of National Enquirer went to Trump and said, "I'm not doing it again. It costs us way too much money. There's more of these out there. You're going to have to do the paying." And so there was one named Stormy Daniels, and so he had to pay that one. And so, but you got Michael Cohen to pay it, and then reimburse Michael Cohen,
who's testifying against Trump, by the way.
Yeah,
he's a witness for the prosecution.
That was part of his plea deal.
I think it's awesome, though.
Oh, I think so too.
So they're going to have Karen McDougal testify. They're going to have the guy from the National Enquirer, who's already been convicted of. I mean, he's already been.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a
the National
case.
Enquirer was the only national newspaper that endorsed Trump in 2016.
Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah, well, and. I don't even know what to say about that. And I'm going to bring up a subject that really quickly that we don't have to get into, but I'm bringing it up for a reason. O.J. Simpson died of cancer at 76. And Barack Obama's made a really, really interesting comment. He said, O.J. Simpson getting
acquitted.
Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. Released was the word I was using, and I knew that wasn't right. Getting acquitted is analogous to Trump getting elected. It's like everybody knew it was wrong, but it felt good. So when he got acquitted, especially in the African-American community, everybody knew he did it, but he got off. He beat the system, and it felt good. And he said it's analogous to white people now with Trump. They know he's awful. They know he's evil. They know he's bad, but it feels good. And so that's why he has this, the absolutely unshakable base that he has, Trump has. And if he gets convicted, it's not going to matter for that base at all. Mm-hmm. But it's still historical and groundbreaking, and I'm getting some schadenfreude out of watching it. So
going back to OJ, at the time, what was your reaction when they announced not guilty?
Oh, it's absolutely along racial lines. I was aghast because I knew he did it.
I was shocked, but yeah. I wasn't shocked. I was just like, oh, this is interesting. But from a legal point of view, I see why he got acquitted. I very much see why he got acquitted.
That was a messed up case.
It was a messed up case. And I think people
and I think Marsha Clark, who was the district attorney, did not prove her case.
Well, exactly.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She did not prove her case.
Well,
and the judge was horrible. He was there for the daily bit of national fame that he was getting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ito was off the charts in it for himself. The trial was all messed up, and I agree with you. I'm surprised.
People who were not back, maybe were kids or something back then, you know, and didn't watch the trial. It's like there's a lot that went on. And,
oh, yeah.
And you got to give credit to OJ's legal team. They did what they were supposed to do.
When you have the money,
when you got
can
the
pay
money.
For it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's privilege.
It was privilege.
I would have been locked up immediately.
It was 100% privilege.
It was
and
privilege.
Lost at trial.
And lost at trial because there was an abundance of evidence against OJ. However, they brought up reasonable doubt. They really did.
And did a great job.
And they did a great job at it. So, and if you're not, there's this misnomer out there that the only way to find somebody guilty has to be without a shadow of a doubt. That's not what it is.
No.
You have to bring up reasonable doubt.
Right.
And they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they
really
absolutely did.
Did.
But getting back to the privilege thing, you know, he could afford it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
For once, you know, a black man beat the system, especially with Mark Furman and all his racist stuff.
Yeah.
And Rodney King had just happened.
And there was all the injustices that happened around, you know, that. So, but anyway, I thought the Obama analogy was kind of interesting and something to think about. It's
I agree.
You know, it's not right, but it feels good. You know, to redneck, disempowered, poverty-stricken men, Trump feels good. And that's why the base is going to support him no matter what.
So. And we are just about out of time. Aaron, thank you for being with us.
Sure. Anytime.
And Patty, will you be going out selling your Trump Bibles this afternoon?
No comment.
Next week, our guests are Valletta Lill, Chris Heinbaugh, and we have a third person coming.
Can't remember. It's somebody else about the bond proposition.
About the bond election coming up.
Yep.
And Valletta has a way of making, and Chris have a way of making bonds interesting
and sexy.
Exactly.
For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, have a good week.